Hey, good. Good to be with you guys.
So I know you were at the SEC Media Days. We had Brent Zwerneman from the Houston Chronicle on Monday. And, of course, he broke the big Texas OU story. When that thing broke down there, what was it like?
I'll be honest, George, at that exact moment, I was in my hotel working on stuff for the Predators.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty crazy. I was there the next day, and obviously it was a huge talking point. But, I imagine I was told by people it was kind of, felt like, the stock exchange or something with people running around.
But, yeah.
I'm going to be totally honest. That broke the afternoon of the NHL expansion draft, and I was back at my hotel finishing up a column on Vanderbilt and looking for the Preds that night.
Wow. And then you got hit with that bomb.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously big news. I wouldn't call it localized news, but it was certainly a big story.
Yeah. So, okay, let's go with the Preds for a minute. They've made a lot of moves, but in your opinion, have they gotten any better?
No. No, I mean, it's hard to look at it and say they have. I mean, I think the path they're on, it's been hard to detect a real strategy in how they're going. They're not, they're not necessarily rebuilding as much as they're just correcting some mistakes from the past, I think, with some of the long-term deals. I don't think it was a bad idea to trade Ryan Ellis and get out from under that deal. But, yeah, when you look at what they've lost, versus what they brought in, it's hard to see a team that's getting any better. But yet, it's not a rebuild. They're adding, they added draft picks for Arvidsson, but they're probably going to re-sign, guys, the 30-somethings like Philip Forsberg and Ekholm. And so, it's hard to detect what direction they're going with that. It's not a rebuild, but it's not they're not all in to go for it either.
What do you think has gone south on Duchesne?
I mean, I'll be honest, George, I've been here 2 years, and I'm not sure when did it ever go north.
That's a good way of saying it. I've described him.
I mean, I understand what he was brought here to boost the offense, and it hasn't happened. I will say this. I think him and Johansson get probably a little too much blame because of the contracts they have, but that's how pro sports work. I mean, these guys are making big money, so they have expectations beyond what some other guys do, and they haven't lived up to them. I don't think Duchesne's been horrible, but I don't think he's been worth $8 million.
Well, he hadn't been worth anywhere near $8 million. So they went through this exercise with Kyle Turris where, they sort of become ostracized. The fans say, okay, you're the whipping boy. And then you get rid of them. How do you think this is going to play out with Duchesne?
I don't really see any way that the Preds can rid themselves of that deal beyond making a trade they shouldn't make, and giving up other assets in addition to that. I think when you looked at the fact that the Seattle franchise really, there wasn't a lot of wheeling and dealing with Seattle around this expansion draft, and I think it's because in order to take on some of these assets that teams were wanting to get rid of, like these long-term deals the Preds have, the price was just too high. And I don't think with Duchesne or Johansson that Nashville is going to be in a position to where they can just easily rid themselves of that, and I think it's expensive, and I think it's something that's getting in their way. But they have made some other moves that have cleared up some cap space. I don't think you look at it right now and say, they're in a bad place with the cap. I don't think that's the problem right now. But the direction is you're clearing cap space to re-sign a lot of the guys you already have. Now, with Saros, I think, yeah, you got to do that. I think that's the piece around, they can build around UC Saros with how he played at the end of last year. But, you know, are you going to put big money towards, like I say, guys like Forsberg and Ekholm and guys who are in their 30s? I mean, these are good players and they're part of the core. But if that's where you're investing, then you kind of think you're already there and you're just maintaining it. And then some other moves suggest that they don't think that. That it doesn't seem to be a cohesive strategy to me.
Yeah. Fan base, I probably pay more attention to the pulse of the fan base than most media people just because of some past histories around the rally and the whole thing to keep them here. Do you think the fan base is happy they had the surge late to get in, or frustrated that they feel like an eighth place that'll limp in but really not go anywhere?
I don't know. I'm always wary of trying to assign one belief to a whole fan base. I think it's tough to generalize like that. I don't think the fan base is happy, but I think that goes back to a lot of last season and how things were going. I mean, it was pretty bleak there for a while. They started playing a bit better, and I think that did allow for some optimism, you know, moving forward, especially when it came to a lot of the younger players. I think going into it, there seemed to be some reluctance to play some of the younger guys. They had talked, you know, David Poile talked about kind of a youth movement going into last season. We didn't really see it until they kind of had to do it and guys got injured. And now all of a sudden, you know, some of these younger guys, they really played pretty well. They made an impact. Guys like Tanner Janot came in and started to kind of change the look of the team a little bit. So I do think there's some optimism in that. I think there's optimism in how Yuji Saros played. So I don't, you know, they're just in that place, George, of a team that's kind of caught in the middle. And in modern professional sports, that's a tough place to be because you're either all in or real close or you're rebuilding to get back there. But when you're caught in the middle, it can be tough, and I think that's exactly where they are right now.
Watson, let's do a couple of questions with Gentry, and then if we need to bleed over into the next segment, we'll do that as well.
Okay. Gentry, first, I know you were in the media days with Vanderbilt, and you've been at some practices, I think I read. How do you feel? Are they a little better than maybe people are thinking they're going to be? Just where do you think they are as we start into the year?
Well, it's tough until we see them on the field. They're not going to practice until Friday. Now, big applause for Clark Lee. He has opened up practices to the media. We learned that today. So we are going to be able to see him practice. So if you ask me that in about a week, I think I'd probably give you a much better answer. We saw like an off-season workout. You know, I think my take on this is I really do like a lot of what Clark Lee is doing. I like what he's saying. I like the culture he's bringing. I think he's been good for Vanderbilt, and he's going to be good for Vanderbilt. But he needs some players. And right now, I just don't think he has enough players.
Do you think they're good enough, Gentry, to win quite most of those non-conference games? I don't think it's that tough a non-conference schedule.
Yeah, I mean, you go to Colorado State, that's a program that has had its moments, but it's been down a little bit lately. And you play Stanford. Now that's an intriguing game there, and it could be tough. I don't, you know, he's probably open with a win over ETSU, but you know, I don't want to sit here and doom and gloom it here the first week of preseason. But I think with both of the SEC teams in the state, I think fans are probably going to need a little patience this year. I don't expect it's going to be great in either, for either team.
Any surprises down at Media Day to you? Did you come away saying, look out for this bunch? Or I know those, I've been at so many of those as a coach, so I mean, I know how they go. But did you come away with any feel of watch out for this bunch while you were down there?
I mean, I can't say nothing really changed my mind. I do. I've been to quite a few of those too, Watson, and they kind of all turn into the same thing after a while. But
yeah,
I would say one coach in particular kind of impressed me, and he has for a while now. And his first time I'd seen him in person was is Missouri. I think Missouri's program is going to do a little better than people think this year. You know, I wouldn't. I wouldn't go ahead and lock in Georgia and Florida as the top two teams in the East. I think Missouri's going to make a little run for that. That's my one little prediction there.
And a quick one, I guess, before we go. What's your take on the quarterback situation at Tennessee? I'm a believer after having to do this when I've gone in with multiple guesses. I remember having Joe Webb, who ended up with Charlotte for a while, and I had Sam Hunt, who ended up being the great country music singer and didn't know who my quarterback was going to be, and I had four of them. And I can remember Gentry saying, two of these have got to go pretty quick as far as in the rotation. Getting four quarterbacks work in preseason is near impossible. I would bet it's down to two within 10 days. Have you got a feel for the one you think it might be?
You know, I really don't. And I thought about this. I mean, what's interesting about this competition is you could make a plausible case for all four of them. You really could. Usually when this sort of thing happens, there's a way from the outside to pretty quickly to do that, to narrow it down to two or differentiate between one or the other. But when you're talking about transfers who you don't know that well, who you know there's a lot of ability, versus a couple of guys who've been on the team, you know, a guy in Harrison Bailey who I personally think showed some real flashes of being pretty good last year. I don't know what it was with the previous staff. They didn't trust him, but they apparently just didn't enough to put him out there. But when he was out there, I didn't hate what we saw. And Brian Moyer, I think that's a guy who has had his moments. So it is going to be fascinating to me because from what Josh Heupel said yesterday at their media day, it sounds like he wants one. You know, I don't think this is going to be a year out, year in, rotate two, three guys kind of situation. I think he wants one guy. And at this point, it's anyone's guess who that's going to be. And very rarely have I seen situations where that was the case. You usually know. You know who the favorite is. You know who it's probably going to be. In this case, I truly have no idea.
And Gentry, to me, it's really intriguing because it's not like Josh has been there a long time. He's just come in, so nobody's gotten a lot of reps. And transfer ends like he's gotten in two that were there. But honestly, all four to me, nobody's ahead of the other one as far as in reps are concerned and knowledge of this offense. So I think it's a wide open situation. I think he's got a tough job because I know he's got to get rid of – he's got to limit it down to two pretty quickly. He cannot let it stay at four. No way four guys can get reps.
Gentry got about 30 seconds.
He also said one thing yesterday that I thought was pretty interesting, which was that he wanted – you need to pick the guy that the rest of the team thinks earned it. And I think that might have been – I think that was a big part of Tennessee's problem last year. I think they were playing the quarterback that the team didn't have a lot of confidence in. I think that's going to have a lot to say with who it's going to be too.
We will have a few more questions for Gentry when we come back, but we will also open the phones for your questions for him. We've gone a little bit of everywhere so far. We'll continue that trend. Hope you'll jump in at 615-844-5600. This is the Plaster Radio Network.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-668-0042. 800-668-0042. 800-668-0042. That's 800-668-0042.
No, no, I'm Bart Durham. I cut my teeth in the legal profession for 3 years as an assistant United States District Attorney. 10 years as a prosecutor changed my view of the law and how it can be used to make people's lives better. I started my own practice, helping injured people fight insurance companies.
I'm Blair Durham. My dad and I want to help. Give us a call at 615-242-9000.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit beefy, or even with type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Affordable term life insurance is out there. Call Term Provider and speak with Big Lou at 800-481-1458. 800-481-1458 or visit BigLou.com. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too.
Today, my new dad and I shot off a rocket in the park.
Today, my new son and I failed to shoot off a rocket.
The rocket launched into the air.
And then crashed into the pond.
I'll never forget that day.
I'll never forget that day, even if I tried.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
I'm Blair Durham from Bart Durham Injury Law. We are open 24/7. Our team is working remotely so that we can stay connected during these times. We can get to work for you without a face-to-face meeting. We will get through this together. Our firm has been here 50 years and plan on 50 more. During scary times like these, we have to stay connected. Check out our social media to see how we can help our community and friends. I'm Blair Durham. We will get through this together.
What is it about a classic that appeals to us? Hello, I'm Sammy Stewart, president of F&M Bank. There are a few classics that haven't changed. This truck and these glasses. You know, with proper maintenance and a few upgrades, a classic still works today. We invite you to experience the classic customer service at F&M Bank that has been our hallmark since 1906. Check us out at myfmbank.com.
F&M Bank, your money.
Smart choice.
It's a Bill King Show.
Getting to the sodium pentothal time, which would be the games, because there's nothing that replaces the games. You can practice all you want. The truth serum is the game. Practice is very important to sharpen your craft, but it's not where you get graded. You get your report card from the stats in the ballgame.
Weekday mornings beginning at 6 on Sports Radio 560 on 95.9 FM.
Download the WNSR app from your app store and take the George Blaster Show on the go from WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
3:23 is the time. Here's what we're going to do. Terry McCormick will have a couple of questions for Tennessean sports columnist Gentry Estes. Then we'll take some phone calls. I've got room for one more of you. If you got a question for Gentry, jump in now at 615-844-5600 as we span the globe. Terry, what do you got?
Gentry, with all that's going on with the Titans in training camp, you know, with A.J. Brown and Julio Jones and Derrick Henry, do you think the expectations for this team are set too high? Because I think a lot of people now with what's going on with the Colts and such disarray with the Texans, the Jaguars rebuilding, are thinking that the division is a given, and I'm one of those. I think they should absolutely win the division, barring catastrophic injury to somebody. But how good do you think this team is when you start to compare them to Buffalo, Kansas City, and even Cleveland and Baltimore when it comes crunch time for this Titans team in the postseason?
Well, I guess that's kind of there's your million-dollar question right there. I mean, I think – do I think expectations are set too high? No. No, I don't. I mean, this is a team that won 11 games last year, added Julio Jones, you know, did made some moves that I think will help the defense. Now we'll see how much, but I think this is a playoff team. I think this is a team that could challenge for the Super Bowl. And I think the Titans think that. That's why you add Julio Jones, and that's a Super Bowl kind of move right there, okay? So, no. I don't think the expectations are too high. Now, does that mean doesn't mean I don't have questions about this team and seeing them out there. I do. Certainly on the defensive side of the ball, you've got a new coordinator replacing Arthur Smith on offense. I wouldn't call anything a given, but there's a lot of talent on this team right now, especially on the offensive side of the ball at those skill positions. And if you look around the league, I think there's a whole lot of teams that would not relish the idea of having to stop Derrick Henry along with those two receivers, and I think that right there makes Tennessee a pretty scary proposition for a lot of defenses.
And then let's move over. Let's talk a little bit of baseball. In your mind and what you've been able to ascertain from different people or whatnot, who's to blame in this Kumar Rocker fiasco? Do you think it's the Mets? Do you think it's Kumar? Is it Scott Boras or some combination of all three?
I don't know. I mean, my guess is the Mets, I guess, if I had to answer that question. I mean, I think, as I wrote earlier this week, none of this makes any sense. It doesn't make any sense that, the Mets do this by basically finding something wrong with his elbow that, if he's hurt, Vanderbilt sure didn't know that. His agent insists that he's not. And if he's hurt, why can't you, fix it? Why can't you? There are doctors that do pretty well with that. So even if that was an issue, I don't know why that means you just completely give up on him. I think the Mets, from what I could gather, I'm not sure what they saw, and I think there's a lot of people on Kumar's side of it that aren't sure what they saw. But whatever it was, the Mets decided they would rather have a draft pick next year and not spend the money on Kumar. And, that works fine if you're the team. You can make that decision, but it puts Kumar in a terrible position. And, why he wouldn't come back to Vanderbilt after all that, I don't understand that part of it either. That doesn't make any sense to me either, that he would rather play for some independent league team or overseas as opposed to coming back to Vanderbilt. This was a strange one. I had trouble wrapping my head around this one and still do.
I got one more quick one for you as we continue spanning the globe with sports. Why do you think people are disinterested in the Olympics this summer? It just seems like there's not the same buzz about the Olympic Games that there were when we were growing up.
We really are spanning the globe.
Yes, we are.
I've been watching them. I mean, I love the Olympics. I stream all kinds of wild, different sports that you can't watch. You'll catch me watching archery and weightlifting and all that good stuff. But honestly, I think part of it has to do with the fact that it's happening in the middle of the night. They're starting, it's in Japan, so they're starting, at about 8 o'clock at night and going to 8 o'clock in the morning, and most of the good stuff's happening at 3, 4, 5 a.m. That probably has a little bit to do with it, but I don't know. I think there is interest, but it's hard to detect stuff like that, especially with the way the Olympics go down this year, being delayed a year and COVID not having fans there. I mean, it's definitely different.
Gentry, get ready. We're going to take some phone calls for you.
Okay.
Let's start with Craig up on line one. Craig, say hello to Gentry Estes. Welcome.
Hey, Gentry. I'm a Predators season ticket holder, have been for about 15 years. Season ticket holders today received an email from the Preds nicely letting us know that for 13 of the 41 home games this year, not only can we not sell our tickets, we can't even transfer. Now, this is supposedly to protect the home ice advantage. Let me tell you something. I'm not real worried about the Detroit Red Wings on a Thursday night or the Seattle Kraken on a Thursday in October. This is nothing but a greedy money grab, and this has gone over like a lead balloon with every season ticket holder I know. I can't possibly go to 41 home games. I never have gone to 41 home games. I've always been able to. I give them to my nephews. I give them to friends. I give them to clients. Sometimes we sell them, and I mean, for a team that did basically nothing except cut weight and cut good players, they didn't add anything. The Predators held on to $10,000 of my money through the pandemic, and this is the thanks that season ticket holders are getting.
That is interesting. I didn't know that. So tell me, How can they enforce that? I mean, if somebody was to tell them, like, how would they know?
Well, what they've done in the past, they've done it for a few years where there would be certain games, and it was usually games against the Blackhawks. In fact, it kind of started as a joke, as the keep out the Blackhawks rule, where they would restrict your ability to transfer and to sell the tickets. You can't list them for resale on the secondary markets. And, I mean, basically the only other way that somebody could get your tickets would be for them to log into your account on their phone and download them that way. There are probably going to be some, I'm sure we're going to figure out workarounds around it. But, I mean, I pay a hell of a lot of money for those tickets. And part of me thinks that what this is them trying to squeeze out those of us that have been there forever, that because of our loyalty, we only get a 5% increase each year. That was part of the deal we agreed 2 years ago. Part of it's them trying to squeeze us out so they can charge tourists $250 a pop.
That's interesting. I mean, it is interesting.
And, you know, it's bad enough that we can't even watch the games on TV thanks to this streaming mess with the TV package. I watched maybe two home games or two Predators games total last year because they were the ones on NBC. Anything that was on Fox Sports that I don't have because I have YouTube TV.
Craig, I'll try to get you some answers on that. You've raised a good point, and a little bit like Gentry, even though I'm a season ticket holder, I had not paid any attention today.
It's probably in your email today, George.
Yeah.
We got ours around lunchtime.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Let me go to Tony in Nolensville. Tony, say hello to Gentry Estes.
Hello, Gentry. It's good talking to you. It's always good when you come on George's show. I've got two questions for you. And first one, I'm going to put you on the spot, Gentry. A year ago in your first year in Nashville, you wrote an article in the Tennessean about there was no face or who was the face of Nashville sports today. And that was in September of 2020. When you wrote that article, you named off several people from Mookie Betts, Tim Corbin, Henry, Eddie George, and all these guys. And it was a good article, interesting article, but you never really pinpointed who that Nashville, what the face of Nashville, or who is the face of Nashville. Other than George Plaster today.
God.
Who is the household name and the face of Nashville sports?
No comment from you, Watson.
None.
Thank you.
I appreciate you bringing that up. I definitely remember that. George, I think I talked to you before I wrote that, matter of fact.
Yeah, you did.
But I think we kind of settled on Derrick Henry in there. But I did mention a lot of different ones, and I think we even had a way for people to go in and vote on who they thought. But if I had to lean, I think it ended up leaning in there for Derrick Henry at this moment.
That's interesting. And one good question that I really, and this has been kicked around, and with George and all of us being baseball fans, the Nashville Music City Baseball Group, you don't hear nothing about them no more. That's just kind of under the carpet, gone dormant, or what? I'm going to get your take on that. I'd love to hear, you know, what you have to say, what's going on with them, or if they're doing anything at all. And, George, I'll listen to it off air. Hey, thank y'all, guys.
Tony, thank you. Good phone call.
Yeah, for the baseball group, I mean, I agree. You haven't heard as much recently. But to be fair, all along, I think the time frame for that was a lot more long-term than it was short-term. I know this came up a little bit when the Oakland A's were starting to look for where they were going to go, and I'm feel pretty certain in their case they would go to Las Vegas is what would happen there. I've always thought from the standpoint of Nashville that the Rays in Tampa were a more likely option if you're looking for a team relocating. But if a team called tomorrow and said, we want to move to Nashville, where are they going to play? There's a lot that still has to happen, most notably the stadium and the idea of who would be the dominant owner in that scenario. You've got a lot of people interested, but you don't have the John Ingram who brought the soccer team here. You need that. and they don't, from what I gather, I think it's a work in progress, but until that happens, it's going to be hard to pull it off without a place to play. I think a stadium's a big part of it.
Jeff in Murfreesboro, say hello to Gentry Estes and welcome.
Good, how's it going, Gentry? I just wanted to ask you, is it true that David Poyle, the GM of the Predators, has the most wins of any GM in pro sports without a championship? Is that true?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sure he's up there. I mean,
is that true? There was somebody I read, not from you, but somebody a while back said that he had the most wins of any GM in American pro sports without a championship. He's been a GM, 25 years now? Or more than
that? You're talking about a Hall of Fame career without a Stanley Cup, yeah, so it would.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the only guy in the Hall of Fame, a GM without a Stanley Cup. Is that true?
It's been more than 25, by the way, because the Predators have been in existence now 23 with one strike year in there. So
yeah,
his Washington Caps years, without having it in front of me, it's well more than that.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, it's been a long time, but and everything. Number two, did you watch the Olympics last night, the hurdles with Sidney McLaughlin, number two? And number three, I'll give y'all a little trivia question. I was doing some research today, Mark Stoops is the second longest tenured coach in the Southeastern Conference, and he's the longest tenured coach in the SEC East. Do you know how many coaching changes have been made in the SEC's Eastern Division since he took over in 2013?
Okay, hold on. Give us the answer.
17.
Wow. Good 17. Question.
And this man gets no love from nowhere, and he still keeps doing success in Kentucky. But I want to ask you what you think the future of Kentucky is. People think he's going to.
I agree on Mark Stoops. I've been beating that drum for a while now. I worked in Kentucky before I came here, so I got to know that program and Mark Stoops fairly well, and was always impressed with what they're doing. He continues to recruit well. I think the ceiling for Kentucky football is such that the team's probably not going to go make a playoff, along with all but about six teams in college football right now seem to only be able to make a playoff. But you know, you got Kentucky winning 8, 9, 10 games consistently. That's pretty dang good.
Gentry, got to run, but thank you for doing this.
Okay.
We are up against a break. That's why I had to abruptly step in.